My name is David Gotz, and I'm going to talk about the work that I did together with Michelle Zhou on characterizing users' visual analytic activity for insight provenance. So if we look at visual analytics just, you know, overall, it's a pretty complex behavior. It's often data-driven, so you don't know exactly what you're looking for. You have to adapt your behavior based on what you find. It's progressive, so that discoveries that you make early on become the foundation for things that you do later on. You have to connect different pieces. And it's nonlinear, so you have to look down lots of different lines of inquiry, some of which don't pan out, some of which do. Now, over the course of this complex process, people are often recording their insights along the way. They're taking visualization snapshots, they're taking handwritten notes, or if they have an electronic tool, they're recording notes. And these notes basically just document what the person has found along the way. So here are just a few from some of the systems that we've looked at in this work. You can see some handwritten notes, some visualization bookmarks. Now, in addition to capturing what has been found, it's also important to capture how things have been found. And this is what we refer to as insight provenance. Particularly if these insights are now going to be used to make decisions, you want to know, how did that little line graph get made? Because I want to know what the assumptions were. I want to try and look at alternative ways of looking at the data. Now, provenance is important, and lots of different tools have different ways of capturing this. But two of the probably categories that these fall into generally are manual provenance and automatic provenance. So the manual technique allows people to record things along the way, to write down how they got to particular results based on intermediate results and their logical rationale. And this is very valuable because it provides semantically rich insight provenance, because people are actually writing the logic and why they got to where they got. But the problem is that it's a bit onerous, particularly if you have a long analysis. People are trying to focus on finding the answer, not documenting how they got there. So you end up having a lot of steps that are omitted from the process. The automatic case is much easier for the user because the system can capture a log of system events or operations along the way. The problem is that it often yields provenance that has limited task semantics because you're capturing the stream of event data. So in our work in developing our own prototype system, which is called Harvest, and you can see a poster about it out in the hall. I'd be happy to talk to people about it offline. But the idea that we're trying to do is to come up with a hybrid approach where we can automatically capture a stream of low-level semantic behaviors that a person is performing, at the same time have them record what they found as far as notes and bookmarks, and then algorithmically combine those together to get a structured representation, a logical representation of what the provenance of those insights is all about. So the benefit, if we can actually accomplish this, is that there's no added user burden because the user doesn't have to document all the steps. But at the same time, we can get a representation of how those things were found that is semantically rich. Now, this approach hinges on the ability to identify the correct granularity at which we want to record the user's behavior within our system when we're capturing things automatically. So it has to be semantically rich as opposed to low-level events. And it should be general enough to span several different tools and visualization metaphors so that we can apply this across all the different tools that a user uses for their visual analysis. So in order to come up with that kind of vocabulary, we set about trying to characterize users' visual analytic activity. So first we started by observing users performing visual analytic tasks. And based on our observations, we developed a model of insight provenance that includes several tiers of user behavior, ranging from low-level events with very little semantics all the way up to high-level complex tasks. Then based from that tiered model, we focused on the action tier, which we think is the right granularity for the building blocks of our model. So we developed an initial catalog of actions based on our observations. Then we tried to build a taxonomy to describe what is the space of different types of actions that people can perform. And then based on that taxonomy, developed a structure for insight provenance, which we call action trails. And I'll talk about each of these through the talk. So quickly, I have one slide on related work. There's a lot of related work that's touching on different aspects of this. So I refer you to the paper for a longer list. But generally, there are four categories of things that tie in. First of all is activity theory, which is a theory in psychology that talks about how people interact with tools to get things accomplished. And it's been applied to HCI in the past. And it takes a bit of a hierarchical view to how people perform tasks with things as tools. So we're going to use that same kind of approach. We're going to be motivated by that in our model of visual analytic provenance. There are also a lot of user studies that have been performed to characterize analytic behavior. These range from high-level studies based on cognitive task analysis to low-level studies where you can instrument systems to capture really a detailed flow of events and try and analyze and infer things out of that. People have also spent a lot of time working on taxonomies. So there are a lot of user-oriented taxonomies that look at ways of classifying user behavior, particularly different tasks and types of analytic behaviors. There are also system-oriented taxonomies that look at different things that systems can do, different system functions. And then finally, there are existing approaches to provenance, some of which I mentioned before, the manual and automatic approach, and also some newer work like the Aruvi system that takes a bit of a hybrid approach where they capture a bit of a structure from steps that the user takes and try and tie it to the user's notes. Okay, so with that review, let me get into the main part of the talk, which is characterizing visual analytic activity. And as I said, we started with a study where we tried to observe people performing visual analytic tasks. So we had 30 people come into our lab and perform tasks. Each of them spent an hour performing a visual analytic task. We broke people up into two groups. So there was a financial analysis group and a corporate travel research group. They each were given some high-level tasks that were a bit vague and ambiguous, so they had to go and weigh different options and investigate different solutions to the kinds of problems that we asked them to do, things like characterize the stock market and give us some investment advice. In both cases, they were given access to some visualization tools like tree maps, geographic maps, line charts, and those kinds of things, and also access to linked data so they could read web pages and those kinds of things. Now, for each user, we gathered data. We recorded video of them performing their task as well as video of the screen. We asked them to talk out loud as they were working so we could see what they were trying to do. We also had a moderator that recorded detailed activity log of every step that the user took along the way. And then we collected the user's notes and their visualization screenshots and all the artifacts of insight that they produced, as well as any preliminary report material. So we told people they'd have to produce a report, but most people ran out of time. So we didn't really get to study that in as much detail as we want. So that's an area for future work. But we focus mostly on the earlier stages of the analysis. Okay, so we have three key observations based on looking at all this data. So the first of those is that there was a clear hierarchical approach to these problems. People were given a high-level task, which we assigned to them. And then to do that, they had to think of some way to accomplish that task. So they broke it down into smaller pieces. And this occurred on multiple levels. And this goes into our tiered model of analytic activity, which I'll talk about in a minute. The second thing we saw is that despite asking people to do different tasks in different domains with different tools, and despite the fact that different people performed even the same task in different ways, at a particular level, there were these common semantic building blocks that people did: querying, filtering, zooming, those sorts of steps. And moreover, those were things that were common across different tools. So just as one example, you could zoom into a map and you can zoom into a timeline of financial data. And the semantics of those are the same, that the user is trying to drill down to narrow the focus of information that they're looking at, even if the dimension that they're narrowing down on is different. And then the third thing that we found is this notion of kind of two phases of work that the person would iterate back and forth between, which is an exploration phase where they're foraging for work and navigating the data and adjusting their visualizations and basically in search of insights. And then an insight phase where they're actually recording things and doing the sense-making work, actually trying to update the information in their notes. And if you look at this long activity log that we captured for each user, you can think of these phases being intermixed, where the insight phases acted almost as a punctuation in the long flow of analysis that people were doing, and they defined important semantic boundaries in the people's activity. So, based on those three key insights, I'm going to talk about the next three parts here, which starts with our four-tiered activity model. And this is based on the notion that people subdivide problems. So at the top, there is a notion of tasks, which is the user's highest level goal. And as I said, these are often kind of open-ended, ambiguous. They require a user to think about and figure out how they need to answer it. So things like identify key stock market insights to generate investment advice, which we ask some people to do. Now, that can be broken down into smaller pieces, which we call subtasks, which are usually much more objective and concrete. They're things that people can actually go decide, okay, I have a tool that can help me do this. I'm going to go answer this question. So things like identify the best and worst performing tech companies year to date. But of course, those subtasks, you can't just click a button and have the system do for the most part. You need to, again, further break that down. And we call that next tier in this model actions. In a way, these are the lowest level semantically rich analysis steps that a user can take. These are things like query and zoom that I mentioned before that were common across the different domains and different tools. So for example, query for data since January 1st can apply to ratings for hotels, or they can apply to stock market data equally well. Now, most actions that you do with these different tools also can't be performed just with a single event like a click of a mouse button. You actually have to do several steps with the tool to do it. And we call these events. These are the lowest level user interaction. And they typically have little or no semantics in and of themselves. So a key press, pressing the letter K, doesn't really mean anything if you look at it in isolation. But if you bundle those key presses together with a mouse button press, now you have something that means a query. Okay, so that's the decomposition that a person does, sometimes in advance as a plan, sometimes ad hoc, and usually a mixture of the two. But there's also a bubbling up that occurs if you think of doing this from a systems point of view where you're observing what the user is doing. So you have key presses and a mouse click combined to form a query. Query and a zoom maybe are ways that you can start to identify top performers, and you might do a couple different subtasks to finally analyze your task. Now within this range, the action tier is a little bit unique in that it has rich semantics, unlike events, which don't really have any semantics, but at the same time is domain independent. So these steps that you do can apply across different tools and different tasks. So we're going to focus in on this action tier as the building blocks for our model. Moreover, these are things that if you instrument your system right, you can observe at this level, where some of the higher level things are difficult for you to actually record. Okay, so that's our tiered model, and now we can focus in on the action tier. And in order to try and understand more about this level of user behavior, we began by defining exactly what we mean by an action. So again, this is an atomic, semantically meaningful analytic step performed by a user with a visual analytic tool. So if you break it up any further into smaller activity, you start getting individual events that don't have semantic meaning, like a key press. Then we defined each action with three different properties. We have type, intent, and parameters. So the type is just a unique semantic signature for each one, like zoom or pan or bookmark. Intent, we tried to look at why the user is performing each of these individual steps. Are they trying to change the data that's being visualized or change the visual presentation of that information? Are they trying to change their notes, their understanding of knowledge? Or are they trying to operate on their history somehow, like an undo? And then finally, there are a set of parameters for each action. So just as an example, a sort action has both a dimension that you're sorting along as well as a direction. So each action has its own set of parameters. So we went about looking at those logs of user activity that we built, as well as some of the other systems that are in our lab, and we developed a table, a catalog of different actions. And the table is in the paper, so I'm not going to go into too many details. I have just a call out here of three of them to show you what's in the paper. And we have the type, intent, parameters, and description. And the point here is not so much to develop a catalog that captures all actions, because I don't think that's possible, and it certainly was not our goal. You can always have new actions as you develop new features in your tools, things that the users can do in one logical step. The point here was really to gather enough representative actions from a range of different systems that we can start to categorize these and build a taxonomy. So that's what we tried to do. We took these definitions that we created in this table and tried to group them in different ways. And we came up with three main families of actions. We have insight actions, exploration actions, and meta actions. And this first level grouping was done based on the user's intent. So exploration actions are those where the user's intent is to change the data or to change the visual presentation of that data. And examples of this category are things like querying, filtering, and zooming. And these are things that are performed by the user as they navigate through the data and try and find insights, so what they do when they're exploring. The second category are insight actions. These are things where the user's intent was to change their notes. Bookmarking, creating notes, removing notes, merging things, anything that changed those artifacts of insight that I mentioned at the beginning. And the final category is kind of a catch-all for things like undo, redo, revisiting earlier states, where you're actually navigating through your history of performance steps. So we grouped the actions that were in our table into this category, and we further subdivided them into things like data exploration actions and visual exploration actions based on the user's intent, whether they were trying to change the data or just the visual presentation. Also, insight actions we determined based on whether they're parameters. So visual insight actions actually referred to the visualization. So you're annotating a visual object or you're bookmarking a visualization state. or knowledge insight actions, they may be motivated by what you see in the visualization, but they actually just refer to the notes themselves and then meta actions. Okay, so with this taxonomy, the next step is to try and use this information that we, or these properties, this taxonomy, to try and develop a way that we can infer from a sequence of actions how they come together to constitute provenance for a particular insight. So for this, we use that two-phase notion of what people were doing if you look at the sequence of steps, where they have an exploration phase followed by an insight phase. And to do this, we can look at the place that each action performed by a user falls in our taxonomy. And what we saw is that people perform what we call a trail, where they'll have a series of exploration actions followed by an insight action. As you can see here, the user queried, split, filtered, zoomed, and then finally created a piece of notes when they were identifying which company was the best performing one in the last 8 weeks. So if we can instrument our system to actually capture this sequence, this segment of user's activity, and anchor it to each piece of note in their notepad, whether they're bookmarking something or changing their notes, now we can start to attach provenance to each of the different steps that the person used. Now, in this case, these are pretty simple. These are just linear sequences. But, of course, things get more complicated. When we have meta-actions, you can start to do branching. So now we have this long structure with lots of different lines of inquiry where the person backed up and then continued on. But we can still anchor that to the visualization. Okay, so we can capture branching. The next thing we need to do is capture the notion of progressive analytics. So here a user created a particular piece of note where we can attach a trail that the user has explored. At another point in time, later on, they can take a visualization bookmark which has its own piece of provenance that's been attached to it. Let's say the user goes on and does some other stuff, and then an hour later they come back, and they pick up where they left off at that visualization bookmark and use that as a starting point to perform some more steps, at which point they discover, oh, you know, now I see something that actually changes my understanding of what I recorded in the note. So we can perform another edit note step. In which case, now we're starting to combine two pieces of user behavior, two trails, that both document the evolution of that note. And it also has a recursive definition back to your other trails. So you can start building up this reverse tree of how people are synthesizing knowledge and how it comes together. So we come up with a definition here of these recursively defined trails. It has an exploration phase that includes a mixture of exploration actions and other trails that you have recorded earlier, terminated by an insight phase of your behavior. Okay, so all this was motivated by our desire to create this hybrid approach to insight provenance. And what it required was a semantics-based visual analytics system where we actually can record all these actions. And this we finally built into Harvest, as I mentioned before, which is a subject of a poster out there. And this is a web-based visualization tool where we can analyze unstructured text and navigate through all the metadata that we extract. And actions form the core of the design of this system. And within the system, there's a module called the Action Tracker, which actually observes all the different things that users do based at this action granularity, as reported by a query panel, the interactive visualization, your history management, all those different pieces. And whenever the user bookmarks something, we then preserve and anchor that stretch of user behavior, that segment, based on our trail definition, to the bookmark. And when you restore a bookmark, it appears kind of at the bottom of the screen, and there are thumbnails and action parameters that you can modify and edit and review as you collaborate. So it gives you both personal orientation as well as collaborative properties. Now, we didn't do a full user study of this yet, but we did collect some initial user feedback where people felt that the trails matched well with their understanding of what they performed, so our granularity matched their notion of steps. People also felt it was helpful to have trails to give them a clear picture of what state they're in, so it helps with orientation. And then finally, the last one talks about this notion of collaboration, where it helps someone else understand how a particular visualization result was derived. So to conclude, we developed a four-tier model of visual analytic activity, ranging from tasks at the highest level down to events. We focused on characterizing the action tier, which included our three different types in the taxonomy: exploration actions, insight actions, and meta actions, and combine those to create our definition of a trail for insight provenance. So the last slide here is just some notion of future work. We definitely need more studies to validate this. We'd like to expand our collection of actions to make sure we cover as much as possible. And And we'd also like to look at ways to infer high-level tasks from subtasks. So we went from actions to subtasks, but we need to go further. And I think that'll require us understanding the presentation step and developing the report, which we didn't get to in our initial user study. And then finally, we're looking at new ways to exploit this kind of provenance. We have visual recommendation built into our tool, so looking at ways to use this to improve that is one area. And the other place is to facilitate expertise sharing. If we can capture actual skill in this notion of inside provenance, can we use that to teach people and for education? So that concludes my talk, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
About the sort of the way that you maintain your actions.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, when you have, can you go back to your slide where you show kind of the branching?
Yes.
There.
Yeah.
Now, in some cases, you start down a query path and you find that it's not particularly useful, and or you know you do a keyword search and find either way too many or way too few terms. Do you actually keep those in your history, or do you just maintain the useful path?
So in the data structure within our actual system and within the model, we keep the unuseful paths because they could turn out to be useful. In the actual harvest system that we built, you'll notice that it actually summarizes that down into kind of a linear list here. So we're only showing on the interface in our system that your current branch in that tree, but it's all kept in the data structure.
Would that be something where if a user basically goes down a dead end and knows that he won't be particularly interested in the results of a particular query path, would that be something that they could basically say exclude this from the history or whatever, or is that you still want to keep that around?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that that'd be useful for someone to kind of clean up their provenance if they want to show that that's not there. So that'd be a good feature to have in a tool.
I'm Wilmendel from UNC Charlotte. You mentioned in your presentation that you captured the verbal information during the study. So do you afterwards kind of analyze the verbal information that the users kind of talk aloud during the study to validate their history or their interaction?
We did watch, we listened to it when they were giving us
right.
The speak aloud, of course, and we were taking notes as we were observing them through a window. And then we also had all of that on video, so we watched some of that video to look through and correlate with our activity logs that we recorded. So to that degree, it informed a lot of the other work as we were trying to look for structure within these manually recorded logs.
So do you find any... sometimes that their verbal information is kind of different than the history, than the interaction history?
Well, the verbal information, we didn't ask them, it's not like we asked them afterwards, how did you get to that
mm-hmm.
insight? We were more asking them to talk about why they were doing things along the way as they were going. So there wasn't that much of a mismatch. I imagine if at the end we asked them,
right.
you created this bookmark, and how did you get there?
Right.
Then I bet they'd have a very different story than what the trail said. We didn't ask them that question, but that would be interesting to look at.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Stuart Card Park. I'm interested that you seem to be able to avoid the necessity to have hierarchical goal structure. You just have a single level of goals. Right? Isn't that a limitation? Is the behavior really that simple that you can have a single level of goals?
Well, so there are tasks and subtasks. I don't think that distinction is actually that black and white to just have mm-hmm. two tiers. It's more just a structure for us to think about how we can bubble up the things that we observe into higher level constructs. I do think in complicated tasks you're going to have, you can probably have more and more levels up above.
Right, right. Well, is the fact that you can also get away with exactly four levels that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I think it was more just a way for us to structure our thinking about the problem.
So you meant four kinds of things rather than
that's right.
Off the possibility of having goals and sub-goals.
That's right. I would say from subtasks to tasks, you could probably have lots of
right.
levels within there.
Okay.
As if your task is solve the financial crisis, then you're going to have lots and lots of levels of subdividing your problem into smaller and smaller
pieces. Right, and you would also expect the appearance of heuristic search in a complicated task from what we know about problem solving.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, I'm Petra Eisenberg from the University of Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
In your list of tasks or actions, I guess,
right.
I was missing one for comparison. I was wondering if you never saw that happen or if it's in there, but I didn't
right.
see it.
So the actions that we have in our catalog are things that the user does with the tool as far as how we define them. So in the tools that we observed, there isn't the compare feature. The comparison is more something they would do by querying and splitting things into two clusters and then looking at it. So the comparison would be made up of several actions. But as I said, I don't think that our action catalog is at all comprehensive. So I definitely think you could expand that and add more things into it.
So you also never saw people reappropriating the tool to allow for comparison? I'm just surprised because comparison is one of the things I observe with people I work with doing a lot.
People definitely compared.
Yeah.
There's no doubt people were comparing. But there wasn't a comparison feature of the tool, which is where that action granularity was. So the comparison is almost a subtask where they were comparing the technology industry to the financial industry. People did that a lot. I mean, people were comparing all the time. But they were doing it by performing various actions to compose a view that let them do the comparison in their head, as opposed to asking the system to compare.
We're pretty much out of time, so we can make one brief one.
I would just the contribution is not clear to me. Can you briefly tell the contribution of the paper?
Right. Yeah. So what we tried to do is just come up with a formalism for describing the insight provenance based on this taxonomy of actions. So we tried to kind of just do a survey of different things that you can do with various tools, and again, not to be comprehensive, but enough to develop a taxonomy of different action types so that you can develop this model of interconnected trails so that we can attach that to these insights that we created and have a way of representing how you got to a particular insight.
So is it the names tasks, subtasks, and actions and events? Is that the contribution?
So I would say it's more focusing on the action tier, which we identified within that set of tiers as being the one that we really wanted to characterize and focus on.
We should really acknowledge our speaker and move on. Thanks.